Welcome to the WR Immigration Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sharina Garcia, and I'm happy to be part of this webinar chatting with Charlie. I'm the Strategy and Innovation Partner here at WR Immigration. I'm joined again with Charlie Oppenheim, who has joined our firms and leads our government relations group. He was the chief of the State Department's Visa Control Unit for 23 years, where he directed the all numerically controlled immigrant visas. This is my third chatting with Charlie. We're going to pick up from our last webinar since the March Visa Bulletin just came out. And I'm also joined today again with Laura, our senior associate, who'll also discuss the issues that are on the top of the mind of the HR global mobility managers. So with that, we can move to the next slide. Again, this does not constitute legal advice. Please reach out to our office if you'd like to schedule a consultation with one of our attorneys. Just a little bit about our firm. WR Immigration is one of the top-rated immigration firms. We combine technology with providing high-touch customer service, and we'll talk a little bit about the technology we use later on in the webinar. And then I'd like Charlie to go ahead and introduce himself.
Hello. As mentioned, I now with WR Immigration, and prior to my joining, as mentioned, I was chief of the Immigrant Visa Control and Reporting Division at the State Department for 23 years. The decisions I made, which resulted in the final action dates and other information posted in the monthly visa bulletins, over 9 million applicants received either a visa issued overseas or adjustment of status in the United States.
Thanks, Charlie. And we also have Laura here. So Laura, why don't you introduce yourself as well?
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Blanairs. I'm a senior associate with WR Immigration in our Santa Monica office. I practice exclusively corporate or employment-based immigration, and I help startups to Fortune 100 companies develop and maintain compliant immigration programs.
Thanks, Laura. So let's walk through our roadmap and what we plan to present today or discuss today. So we have a March Visa Bulletin summary. We also have the 2022 State Department annual report. Again, we're going to go through some prediction and trends, do a fiscal year 23 Visa Bulletin recap, and then go through a common case profile for HR discussion. Again, and the prior to chatting with Charlie's that I've co-hosted are on our YouTube channel, so feel free to check those out. And so let's move on. And this slide goes through the visa bulletin for the numbers in September 2022 and March 2023. These are the final action dates. As you can see, for all chargeability, right? All chargeability, EB1 is current all throughout. EB2 has a final action date of November 1, 2022, since December 1st, and it's right now it's the same. And then EB3 is current for all chargeability. Then we look at China, EB1, it's current until December, and then we see a final action date of February 1, 2022, starting on January 1 of 2023, which is the same, which is the same number currently in the March Visa Bulletin. And then we look at EB2. In October, we see forward movement, so from April to June, and then it stays steady in October all the way through June 8, 2019 until present. So it's the same final action date. EB3, we see forward movement in October, and then we see forward movement again in December. And then now it's holding steady at August 1, 2018. For India, we see the first preference current until January 1st. And then we see a final action date of February 1, 2022. And then EB2, India, we see a retrogression. So the red means it's going backwards. So the date has moved backward twice. So April 1, 2012, is the date in October of 2022. Then it moved even further back to October 8, 2011, and that's where it stands right now in the March Visa Bulletin. EB3 India, there's forward movement in October, and then there's forward movement in December, and then now we're staying steady at June 15, 2012. So, Charlie, is this accurate for your prediction that you had from last webinar we had?
Yes, it is. It's tracking very closely to what we said last month.
Okay, so everyone's asking the question, what's going to happen to China and India and why are we holding steady? Do you foresee that it's going to hold steady at those dates in the foreseeable future?
Yes, I believe that on a worldwide basis, employment first will stay current. And I believe that is likely to stay current throughout the fiscal year for rest of world applicants. For both China and India employment first preference, I would expect that February 1st of 2022 final action date to apply for the foreseeable future. Hopefully we'd see some maybe forward movement at some point in the second half of the fiscal year, starting maybe in May or June. There is plenty of both China and India employment first preference demand so that state can hold those two dates until they feel very comfortable that there are going to be otherwise unused numbers in the first preference category, which would allow those dates to move forward. So again, I would not expect any China or India first preference forward movement until May at the earliest.
And how about EB2 or EB3?
EB2 for, and this would apply for rest of world applicants, China applicants, and India applicants in the employment second preference category. Item D in the March Visa Bulletin indicates that corrective action will be required. Therefore, I would not expect any forward movement of employment second preference dates. And I think that some of the may see retrogressions of the existing dates as early as April.
So probably in next webinar, we're going to see more red.
I think there's an excellent chance for more red in the employment second preference. Okay. For April, or if not in April, then definitely for May.
Okay. All right. We can go to the next slide. So we were talking about the 2022 State Department annual report. Can you give us a little bit more information about this annual report?
Sure. It's the annual report is a very good tool for people that want to see what's happening in the world. The Table 5, unfortunately, has not been released yet. And Table 5 shows the immigrant number use on a worldwide basis. And that is extremely important when we're looking at the employment categories, where the Immigration Service typically does about 85% of the number use for employment cases. So the state has shown in Table 6 how many numbers were used in each category overseas. But again, we need to see the Table 5 data to see the total picture of what happened in fiscal 2022.
Do you know when Table 5 will be released? Any idea?
I am very surprised it has not been released yet. Typically, that is one of the first tables that is published on the travel.state.gov website, because it is known that most people are much more interested in seeing Table 5 than they are Table 6.
Well, let's look at what we had in the previous years for Table 5. So the next slide. So this is worldwide State Department annual report. And what we did was we gave you the numbers for fiscal year 2016 to fiscal year 2022. As Charlie said, for Table 5 worldwide, it's to be determined. We don't know what it is. But Charlie, what do you expect it to be, or what do you think it'll be?
I would expect that Table 5 will show at least 270,000 numbers having been used in fiscal 2022, hopefully very close to the 281. So, but again, I would expect at least 270,000 numbers to be shown for table for in 2022.
And then table six is just the ones used at overseas, right?
Right. And I think this is very encouraging to see this because it shows that in fiscal 2022, the State Department used over 55,000 numbers. So it shows that state is well into the recovery mode of recovering from the backlog of cases, which resulted from the post closures during the COVID 19 times. And that they, again, that they are on the path to recovery, which is very positive news.
Good. It's good to hear some positive news. Let's move on to the table five for China, right? And so can you kind of walk us through that and what you anticipate it will be for fiscal year 2022?
Yes. In all of the China totals, their first, second, and third, I expect them to be significantly more than the 2021 totals, which again will be an encouraging sign and show that many of the cases that have been waiting for many years were able to be processed during fiscal 2022 and will continue to be processed during the current fiscal 2023.
Okay. And then for the next slide, it's India. So again, what do you think?
Again, here, I think that the totals will be at least the same as 2021, and I would expect them to be appreciably higher for fiscal 2022. And again, it's important to note that the annual limits for fiscal 21, 22, and 23 are at all-time highs. So that is what is allowing these totals to be significantly higher than they were in earlier years.
Yeah, and the next slide, we actually go through the annual limits. And so this is what you're talking about, right, Charlie? So we see fiscal year 2019 at about 141,000, fiscal year 2020, 156, and then we see huge jumps, right? Fiscal year 2021, 2022, 2023. But then tell us about fiscal year 2024 and how that number's kind of going back to what the fiscal year 2019, 2020 numbers.
Right. The way the annual limit for employment categories is calculated, it starts off at a minimum of 140,000. And then to that, they add any unused family preference numbers from the previous fiscal year. So in fiscal years 2020, 2021, and 2022, there were significant amounts of unused family numbers, which were added to the employment categories. I think that 2023 will be the last time this occurs, and that for fiscal 2024, the annual limit will be, and for this purpose, estimated to be approximately 150,000. I think it'll be somewhere between the 2019 and the 2020 totals. But again, the annual limits for employment for the past three fiscal years have been extremely high, and this will not continue as we enter into fiscal 2024 and beyond.
So typically, just looking at these numbers, the unused family base is roughly no more than 10,000 usually.
Typically, yes, it is. Yeah. And for example, so that is why we're going with the 150 limit. You know, I think that maybe if for estimating purposes for planning, if we thought maybe even as low as 145, but again, yeah. Once the State Department is able to fully recover from the COVID issues and post are back to normal operating status, the vast majority of family numbers should be used each year, leaving very few to be added to the employment limit for the next year.
Okay. So let's go to the next slides. And Tarly, why don't you talk to us about what are NVC waiting lists? What are these numbers? Where are they coming from and how do we use them?
Right. Every year on November 1st, the National Visa Center is asked to prepare a report indicating the amount of applicants on approved petitions which have been forwarded to the National Visa Center for processing overseas. So when they prepared the report on November 1st of 2022, 3,816 China applicants had approved petitions pending at the National Visa Center. And this total is in a state of flux constantly because some of the people reflected on that total will be scheduled for visa interviews. But in the USCIS will also be submitting newly approved petitions to NVC. So this total will fluctuate. But again, this 2022 total is a very positive sign for both India and China because it shows the amount of cases has dropped significantly from what was at the same time in 2020 and 2021. So again, this is a very positive indication of that the State Department is back to more normal processing times.
But that's the State Department. So basically, when I have an I-140 approval and I designate on the I-140 to send it to for consular processing, that's when you're counting these waiting numbers, right?
Correct. So something that is indicated consular processing is included in that 3816 total for China. If you indicated that you would be filing for adjustment of status, a case that's going to be processed in the States would not be reflected in this. And again, as I mentioned, typically the Immigration Service uses about 85% of the numbers available under the employment annual limits.
So how do you know what's sitting in the queue with USCIS?
When I was chief at the State Department, on a monthly basis, they would provide me a very detailed report, which would indicate, for using this as an example, how many China employment first preference applicants they had pending processing. And they would break that information down for me by year and month of the applicant's priority date. And I could take that information into consideration along with the amount of cases that were ready to go over for overseas processing. And I would utilize that information to determine how and when I could advance the various final action dates.
So we need to get a USCIS person here on our webinar so we can ask them this question, whether when they send the numbers to state monthly, whether they're counting that individual who has an approved I-140 in EB-2 and chose adjustment of status, and then also has an approved I-140 under EB-3 and chose adjustment of status. That would be really interesting to hear whether they're sending you both numbers or just sending you one.
My guess is that they're only sending the one. How it will be processed, if a number was immediately available, where it's going to be processed.
Gotcha. All right. Well, the next slide is the EB-2, right? And so
yes.
This, again, is also based on what's at state as of November 2022, right?
Correct. And this is these totals are increasing. And I think this is a reflection of that there are more cases pending overseas. And one of the reasons why there have been retrogressions in the India employment second preference date, and that state has already announced that on a worldwide basis, corrective action may need to occur in the employment second preference category. And again, using the India second preference waiting list total. And again, this is only at the National Visa Center. There are 23,916 applicants with petitions on file with any type of date but those applicants are competing against the India per country limit for 2023 of 3,944 numbers. So this is a dramatic indication of why the India date, the China date, is not advancing as much as some people would like, and that on a worldwide basis, why it will be most likely necessary for retrogression of the worldwide date to occur in the coming months.
So what's Korea and South Korea and Brazil doing on this chart?
It is one of the things when people, always when they would be talking to them, to me, they would consider that China and India were the primary employment beneficiaries. They were the big demand. It is very surprising. Korea would rival often China in the second and sometimes the third preference category if you were looking at potential number use. So again, Korea demand, and some of this total is because that a lot of cases were not processed in 2020 and 2021. And therefore, you know, the backlog of cases kind of built up. But again, many of these South Korea cases and the Brazil cases are in being processed in fiscal 2023 and utilizing numbers. And again, that is why there will be likely retrogression of the worldwide second preference date and retrogression of both the India and China date potentially at some coming time. And I think that some of those dates in second preference will retrogress as early as April.
Okay. And then the next slide is the EB3. So these are top EB3 countries. And we see India, but then we see in the middle, my country, Philippines, and then we see China. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. And I think that this is, again, this is very good news. If you look at the 2020 total of 36,000 for India, 32,000 for the Philippines, 7,000 for China. And then you compare that with the November of 2022 totals, which dramatic reduction in the numbers. So I think this shows that during fiscal 2022, the State Department was in very active recovery mode and were able to process and issue visas to a lot of the Indian, Philippine, and China employment third preference applicants and significantly reduce the quote waiting list at this time. So this is a very positive chart for these three countries.
Great. All right. Well, let's move on to the employment-based green card process. And Laura, why don't you walk us through the green card process so we understand what's going on here?
Yeah, we kind of have been talking about all these backlogs and the charts. And just to kind of give you a refresher about how the employment-based green card process works, we're going to draw out a car or traffic analogy because it seems like some of us are stuck in traffic jams. But to draw it out, the steps most commonly for the employment-based green card process starts with a company sponsoring a foreign national employee by filing a labor certification application. This is known as PERM, or the test of the U.S. labor market. And once a labor certification application is approved by the Department of Labor, the company then files an immigrant petition for alien worker, known as the immigrant petition or Form I-140. In some cases, if the offered position and foreign national both qualify, the labor certification application is skipped. So these are the priority workers or the EB1 preference category, in which case you start at the immigrant petition stage. The visa bulletin effectively serves as a stoplight. So if your priority date is deemed current, as we were discussing earlier on our slides, you can then immediately move forward with the filing of the adjustment of status application. And sometimes you can file them concurrently with your immigrant petition. For many, as we're discussing, like EB2 or EB3 India or EB2 or EB3 China, you have a stoplight and you have to wait until your priority date or the date your labor certification application was filed. That's when you earn or receive your priority date. You have to wait until that priority date becomes current for filing the adjustment of status application. You can file the adjustment of status application if you're based in the United States to file from H-1B to green card. Or if you're outside of the U.S., you can file for consular processing. So that's kind of the high level summary of, you know, how you move forward to receive a green card through the employment-based green card process.
So just to kind of summarize it, my employee wants to start the green card process. They're born in France, right? Do they have a stoplight typically?
Typically, they do not. So they would follow sequentially, or if the employer approves it, a concurrent immigrant petition filing with adjustment of status application. Right now, how things are looking is the labor certification process, assuming they're required to test the U.S. labor market, is taking quite a long time. The processing times to receive a prevailing wage determination with the Department of Labor is upwards to 8 months, and then recruitment can begin. Some companies do permit concurrent recruitment. And then the filing of the labor certification application is taking, again, like another 8 months. So it's really difficult to complete the labor certification process within a year. Most cases at this point are taking over a year from start to approval.
So are you typically telling clients that if they have someone born in France and they're under EB2 or EB3, that'll take about 2 years to get a green card?
You know, I think historically that was my guidance to say it would take about 2 years. I think given the significant uptick in DOL processing times, I think I would say more 2.5 years for this example. So we want to be on the front end starting and even 3 years if the company sponsorship policy will allow.
So are you now telling companies they should start their labor certifications 3 years before the person's H-1B maxes out?
That is my conservative guidance at this point, given the Department of Labor processing times.
That's mine too. It used to be 2 years, and now we're telling our clients 3 years. And then for our China and Indian born applicants, they basically sit at the stoplight for some period. Right, which is based on what Charlie's talking about, where they're just sitting there waiting.
Right, and because of the increase in Department of Labor processing times, while we know they're not going to receive the green card in 3 years, starting the process 3 years left of their NIV is still important, because securing the priority date and securing an approved I-140 is critical to lock in H-1B extensions. So we still are advising starting green card sponsorship for Indian and Chinese born foreign nationals with 3 years left on their NIV status to ensure they have the ability to extend their H-1B and not be in a crunch for maintaining their work authorization status.
Okay. And then we can go to the next slide. And then this is what we call the lane change slide. So why don't you walk us through this lane changing slide?
Yeah, so we are drawing out this traffic analogy in that, you know, we had a ton of our clients file in October of 2020, like we talked about last month. They filed EB3 I-140s concurrently with adjustment of status. And that was available because EB3 permitted date for filing, which was important to get the AOS on file for our clients. Then we saw in February, March 2022, the EB2 lane advanced. So all of our clients then, in an effort to move their case forward, chose to upgrade or interfile the I-485 Supplement J, which is a transfer of underlying basis. So their adjustment of status remained pending, but then they said, hey, USCIS, I qualify for EB2. Please apply the EB2 I-140 to my underlying adjustment of status with the hopes of getting their adjustment of status approved sooner, their green card sooner. And what that ended up doing was jamming up the EB2 lane. So as we talked about on our first couple slides here with the March visa bulletin, we're seeing more favorable dates now in the EB3 lane, and EB3 lane looks like less traffic and an easier route to get to the green card destination. So a lot of lane changes causing, you know, backups in EB2 at this point.
And I guess where we're concerned in asking the questions, Charlie, about the double counting, if the EB3, if the EB2 was designated as consular processing, then you're using that and counting that in your estimates, right? But the EB3 is an adjustment of status. You're not using those numbers in your estimates.
Correct. If the petition was forwarded to the for state processing, it would be under those NVC totals shown in the earlier slides. We would only count that in consideration of the final action dates, though, once the applicant was documentarily qualified, so that if state had asked you to submit all of the applicant's required documentation and you had done so, only then would they be counted for consideration against the limit. Whereas in the immigration service, also, they would be processing the, if it was processing in the case there, they only report the demand to us once they've done all the clearances, have all the required information, if an interview is required, then they would request a number from the State Department. And they would provide the applicant's A number, their priority date, their foreign state chargeability, and their preference category. So if I had originally filed my petition as an India EB2 applicant, as an India EB3 applicant, and they would have submitted the request for a visa number in October. Unfortunately, the priority date had retrogressed, so State Department would hold my request for A number 123 and count that in consideration of moving the India third preference date in the future. But if at the same time I requested that my case be upgraded to EB2 status, once the USCIS had approved that upgrade, then the Immigration Service would delete the request for the third preference, A number 123, and then submit the request for India second preference. So that's where this EB3 picture, this EB3 car, suddenly cuts in right behind the blue EB2 car. And that causes the, sometimes corrective action in India EB2 or the date to slow or et cetera. Or it could happen vice versa. The person could be downgrading from 2 to 3. So they're only counted in one lane at a time for actual number use.
So for EB2, so if my EB2 was filed as adjustment of status and my EB3 is filed as adjustment of status, state only allocates the number at the time that the USCIS officer approves my 485.
Correct. The only immigration request a visa number, it is the very last stage of the processing on the case. Once they know that the person is ready, they'll submit the request to State Department. State will give an immediate response if the applicant is within the applicable priority date for the category. And then immigration could print off that approval, stick it in the applicant's case file, and ship it off to get the green card produced.
So how long does it take to actually get the number allocated? So if I'm a USCIS officer and I adjudicate it and I said, okay, this is all good, and I request this number from state, how long does it take state to give the number to me?
It's immediate. So what happens is the immigration officer has finalized everything, all of their required processing. They're ready to go on my case. So they would type in, for my case, India employment third preference, my priority date is October 1st of 2010. They would put that in. They'd put my A number 123 in, et cetera. They would press a button, and then that would go to the State Department. State Department would compare that request to make sure that A number 123 has not been previously requested. If it hasn't, and it's within the India date, which it would be, then an immediate response goes back to immigration saying authorization granted. And again, they could print that out, put it in my case file and ship it off, and however long it takes for my green card to be produced.
Okay, thanks. That's really good to understand when they actually issue the number and when they're finally counted. Let's go to our next slide, which is our hypothetical. We had actually used part of this hypothetical last time, but we wanted to expand it now because we're seeing more of this hypothetical happening where there's even more lane changes happening. So Frank is an Indian national. He's held H-1B status since 2009, has a priority date of October 23, 2012. Frank's initial I-140 was approved as EB-2 in January 2013 with Banana Company. In October 2020, Banana Company supported Frank and they filed an I-140 EB-3 concurrently with their AOS application. So this is what we call the lane changing. So there's a lane change happening. On July 14, 2021, the I-140 EB-3 petition was approved. The adjustment is still pending. On March 15, 2022, Banana Company filed an I-45J to request that USCIS transfer the basis of Frank's pending application from EB-3 now to EB-2. So just remember, he was in EB-2, then he asked to move to EB-3, and now he's asked to move back to EB-2. Okay, so we're having lane change switching. He receives a receipt notice for the I-45J, but his case is stuck. It's not moving, right? And now in June 2022, Banana Company promotes Frank. He now holds a senior leadership position. His job duties now include managing a team of junior and mid-level team members. In July 2022, Frank's team is growing globally. Frank wants to use this as an opportunity to qualify for EB1. He asks Banana Company to assign him abroad with Banana International Company for 1 year as a manager. As of August 2022, Frank has been employed with Banana International Company in Dublin as a manager. In August 2023, he will qualify for an EB1 and Banana Company is willing to sponsor him for it. So what we have here in this hypothetical is the lane changing, and we want to talk about when there's a crash. So just to recap, Frank was in EB2. Frank then asked to move to EB3, and then EB2 got faster, so he asked to move to EB2. And then he got promoted, and now he's asking to be moved to EB1. So, Laura, can you kind of walk us through this hypothetical and what's going on here?
Yeah, this is happening more and more. Folks that have been in line for their green card for many years are being promoted to senior leadership. They've been with the company for, in this case, over 10 years. So not shocking that Frank's a valued member of the team. And I have a lot of conversations of our clients wanting to take advantage of, you know, opportunities abroad to put them in an EB1. So the first thing is there's got to be a business need. There has to be, the matching managerial duties. So this needs to be closely analyzed with the attorney team. We're kind of high level here saying like Frank qualifies as a manager, but there are multiple factors to walk through, right, Sharina, about like how do they qualify for a manager role? Can it be documented so that USCIS can clearly see how Frank operates as a manager with Banana International Company? Does he have higher fire over authority over his global team? How is he managing them? Making sure that he's not doing the day-to-day administrative tasks of that he's delegating. So assuming that Banana Co. in the U.S. is then offering him a return position in the U.S. as a manager, again, high level without diving into the details, Banana Co. can, you know, immediately file the EB-1 I-140 as of August 2023 when Frank hits his one-year tenure at Banana International Company. The question becomes, does Frank want to consular process his green card? So, you know, we strategically plan with the company, how long does Frank need to be abroad? Is it just the year? Was it just to toll the 1 year for the multinational manager petition? Or is it a 2 year international assignment that he needs to complete some mission critical operations in Dublin? He does have the opportunity to consular process again, because his priority date is from 2012. He's immediately current for a EB1 green card, which is what we're talking about with the crash. Department of State, USCIS is not expecting someone to have that kind of priority date and move into the EB1 lane.
Yeah. So, Charlie, can you talk about the crash as well?
Yeah. And this is the fact that more applicants, and whether it's India or any country, are taking advantage of this now. It is putting more pressure on the employment first preference annual limit. So it will, and this is the type of thing that is causing the India and China employment first preference date to currently hold at the, you know, the February 1st of 2022 date, and will probably limit movement until later in the fiscal year.
So in your experience, Charlie, in your over 20 years, how retrogress was EB1 China or India? Is this pretty normal to be at a, it's at, what is it now? It's at 2022. Is that right? Let's see.
Yeah, it's November. Pretty, yeah. There has often been an employment first preference date for China and India, but the date for the China and India employment first preference, when there was one applied, it is typically closer to the actual calendar date than the dates in the employment second and third preference. And that's
right
becoming,
now, yeah, right now it's becoming February much more 1, evident now. Right now it's February 1, 2022. So when I'm counseling my clients, like Laura's counseling her client, we would say, oh, there's about a 1 year quota wait still, right?
Right.
And so is it typically, like, is that the most you've ever seen for China, India, EB1 is a year, or has it even been more than a year in your experience?
I'd have to look back. To be honest, I don't have it right off the top of my head. But again, I think typically the India, the first preference has been closer, the date has been closer to the calendar date.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to our next slide. And we had some questions that came in from last webinar that we're going to run through. So Charlie, this one is yours. Is it expected that priority dates, or what we call wait times, will lengthen?
I would say, as I think that the wait times are likely to lengthen, and I think that this will be even more evident in fiscal 2024 and going forward, when the overall annual limit and then the resulting per country and category limits are also lower. So fiscal 2023 is our last kind of splurge year where we have extremely high annual limit and applicants are going to be able to be processed at greater numbers, and therefore potentially have more movement of the final action dates.
Okay. And then, Laura, for you, my job duties today are a much bigger superset of the job title of my I-140. When can I change my job title?
So we'd want to know more, but the sort of first threshold question is, does this person have an adjustment of status application on file? If their form I-485 has been pending for more than 6 months, there's greater flexibility for portability to new employers or new and increased job duties because the threshold is same or similar. So you're arguing occupational class, you're arguing that the position is same or similar, which there's a lot of flexibility there. If it's just the I-140 that's on file, we haven't gotten to the adjustment of status application submission, we want to take a closer look at this. If what we're understanding here is this person's been promoted from an individual contributor to a manager where they have a team with higher fire authority, my recommendation would be to complete a new sponsorship, like a new labor certification application, assuming that is the classification for this individual. If it is just a job title change where there's, you know, I've seen companies reorganize where they're calling a quality engineer just engineer, that title change alone with minimal job duties and no change of location would not require a new labor certification application. So this is going to require a little bit more detailed analysis, but those are some good threshold questions to ask for the analysis.
Okay, so changing my job title doesn't necessarily mean you have to restart the process.
Correct.
Yeah, it just really depends upon what your duties are.
Right. And so sometimes with bigger superset, as I was mentioning earlier, it might mean that there's managerial duties or higher fire authority, which would likely point us toward the need to complete a new labor certification. If their duties are just more complex because of seniority or because of your knowledge in the area, that may not require a new labor certification application and would be suitable for you to eventually file the adjustment of status application.
So this is the question I get all the time. I'm got promoted to manager. Can I now be EB1?
Right. So this is where we bring up that Frank example where you can be EB1 if you serve in a managerial qualifying role at a company affiliate abroad. You have to be payrolled by that company affiliate, like Banana International Company, for one full year serving in a qualifying managerial role, and then come back in the U.S. in a similar position sponsored by the U.S. company. So it's not as simple as being promoted to manager qualifying for EB1. It requires a whole subset of qualifying criteria that just the promotion doesn't meet.
But how about if I can work remotely from the U.S. for my international job and be put on the international payroll? Will that work?
No, unfortunately, it won't. There has to be a reason why you're outside the U.S. and that you are meaningfully engaging in work for that foreign affiliate company.
So you actually have to be physically outside of the U.S., pull your kids out of school, go work in the Dublin, Ireland for a year. And you can't, at any time you come back to the U.S., probably is going to go against that 1 year. So you really need to commit to living and working outside of the U.S. for 1 year, is what you're saying.
Right. There's no shortcuts here.
Yeah, no shortcuts. Got it. All right, Charlie, the big question, will EB1 become current again anytime soon?
No, it will not in the foreseeable future. I would not expect it this year, and I do not expect it most likely in 2024 as well. Again, because the annual limit and the per country limits will be much lower in fiscal 2024. So I do not believe it will be current for India or China in the foreseeable future.
Okay. And then what is your prediction for EB3 India?
India EB3, I would hope that the date would be able to advance somewhat. The positive note is that the fact that the rest of world final action date is current at this time. And as long as it remains current, that has the potential to allow otherwise unused numbers under the worldwide third preference limit to be made available to India third preference applicants, allowing that date to advance. So I think, again, as long as the rest of world employment third is current, I think that is a positive indication for potential movement in the India third preference date.
So you know now a lot of the EB2s are going to want to move to EB3 again.
Well, and I think that one important consideration, if an applicant is looking to upgrade or downgrade, is the amount of time that would typically take to occur. Because, you know, if you put in today to downgrade from India second to India third in the hopes that the India third dates could be more advantageous, if it takes, you know, 10 months to get that approval down, by the time it's approved, you're into 2024 and you may not have the date issue at that point.
Well, you know, our clients, Charlie, they always want to premium process everything. So
yeah, but again, it's it's how fast, you know, will USCIS act upon the case. One of the things I had suggested when I was still working was that if an applicant were entitled to, you know, employment second and third, I mean, if you're an India second preference applicant, you can downgrade to third. So why not allow your petition to be considered automatically as both India employment second and employment third, and take advantage of whichever priority date comes first. This would reduce the amount of workload on USCIS, because USCIS is having to process my petition being downgraded. That's taking staff time away. The tricky thing is how to track the person who is filed and eligible in both second and third preference.
I don't think that's hard to track, because you would always look at the months and see what's most advantageous, right?
I'm talking in terms of tracking for immigration and state, because again, when immigration requests a visa number to the State Department, it enters the applicant's A number, and we can only have on file one A number at a time.
Yeah. Which it means that the counting system needs to be upgraded.
Yeah. So, but again, you could have A number 123 and 123A, maybe. But again, it would take some changing in the accounting software, and how easy that is to do, I don't know. But I believe it would save a lot of time for USCIS processing, that they just say carte blanche. If the person is a second preference applicant, they're also going to be entitled to third preference.
Well, that brings us to the question that we got as well. Why can't Department of State identify multiple applications filed by a same person, both in EB2 and EB3?
Again, if the application is being submitted by USCIS for a number, they have completed all the required processing, and all they're waiting on is the authorization of a number from State Department, they can only request the number for one A number. So A number 123 can't be requested for an India second and an India third and be in the State Department's database. If the second preference is already there and they submit a second request in third, it's going to bounce it back saying this A number has already been requested.
Okay, got it.
And again, it's a software issue. If somebody could figure out how to allow the two to be done. The other tricky thing is if you do that, if you've got A number 123 sitting in the India second and the India third lines, those are going to be considered when state is making a determination of the final action dates each month.
Well, yeah. So in my mind, in Laura's example for the person who moved to EB1, right? And they also have an EB2 and EB3. You know, for me, it's like if you just had a database that showed you Frank, and then he has the same A number, and he has three approved I-140s, right? And then you just look at Department of State looks at it, and USCIS looks at it. To me, it should be a simple technological solution to find a database that can actually align all the numbers and help you figure that out. But
right. You know. I mean, so in that case, if you had A number 123, 123A, and 123B reflecting three different categories you're in, somehow when whichever the category is that's the date is reached first and the person is adjusted in, then there would be have to be some mechanism to remove the other two numbers. And that's kind of the tricky part. But again, that's what computers are supposed to be good at.
They're supposed to take care of that stuff for us. So that there is no crash. All right. So let's move on. We're going to wrap up our webinar. And then, Laura, do you want to talk a little bit about some of our corporate services and the forecasting and reporting we can do with the green card modeling?
Yeah, one helpful tool, a very powerful tool we have here at WR is our RAPID tool. And so this helps keep everybody in the lanes or helps us change lanes or tell you what the impact of those things are for your program, as well as, you know, keeping your team compliant, keeping your employees compliant, and also help with your budgeting. So if you are a company that has a generous sponsorship policy that supports lane change, these inner files, we can predict out budgets for you of what that would look like for the various cost centers. So reach out if you have any questions of how this works, if you want to see it in action for your program or how it could impact your program. That's what Sharina and I are here for.
Yeah. And then the next upcoming Chatting with Charlie continues in March. So we'll have another webinar to go through the April Visa Bulletin. So save the date. It's going to be on Wednesday, March 15 at 11 a.m. Pacific. And with that, we're going to conclude our webinar. So I thank Charlie and Laura again for all your insight. And I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thank you for listening to the WR Immigration Podcast. We hope you found this enjoyable. If you have further questions, please reach out to us at visalaw@wolfsdorf.com.